Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00023. Recorded on February 28, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Dragon, ass. Dragon, ass. Chapter 23.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
While scrolling through my social media, I came across this headline type of post, right? From a local AM radio station here that I follow. It's a news station, so I get like news headlines by this means over social media without having to be listening to the radio, as shit happens. And there was this one particular, I mean, they have headlines that come across every so often, you know, and I could take it or I could leave it as I wish. And I saw this one particular headline that kind of caught my attention and grabbed my curiosity, right? And it says something to the tune of orange dust from West Texas can be like a life-threatening challenge to children. And I'm thinking, what in the fuck? I mean, we get dust. We get these situations in north central Texas. Similar, like, to a very low scale, like low-grade dust bowl, right? You get certain weather systems that will kind of kick up, you know, be windy, basically, and it'll blow in dust from West Texas. Sometimes you can recognize it, you know, as a certain haze in the sky. And sometimes, like, you know, like pollen will do from trees. It'll make a coverage, you know. Trees will be green on everything. You come out, like, your windshield, your hood, on your car is all green. Well, we'll get, like, a little orange kind of brown, right? It's not very common, but on the other hand, you know, it's very typical, right? It's really nothing to be alarmed about. And so I see this headline. It's like all of a sudden there's alarm associated, right? Alarm associated with this dust. So I'm thinking, with all this whacked out shit that's been going on, right? Our news headlines nationwide have been loaded with all kinds of train wrecks and hazardous chemical spills and shit on fire. And I'm thinking something happened out in West Texas that's like dumping all kinds of like radioactivity bullshit, you know, everywhere in its path along the way, you know, blowing out east along with the prevailing weather systems and whatnot. So I got to look and I got to see, right? I got to look and I got to see. So I click on this and I'm looking for text, right? You know, it's a news station, so it's going to come up with like its either video or audio of a newscast segment. But oftentimes, news channels will actually have like a text transcript under it. And, you know, I'll just go for the text. I'll peruse it real quickly instead of, you know, going through like a minute or two of fucking media, right? But no, there was none of it. So I had to play the video and I had to wait along with it, you know. And I was like, all right, you know, what the fuck blew out in blew up in Abilene, or like out in Midland, Odessa, right out there? You got all the oil wells, right? You got the petroleum industry and shit. You know, maybe something blew the fuck up out there. No. All they're talking about is the ordinary dust that blows in from West Texas in certain situations. And then they add to it the fact that certain asthmatic kids, right, kids that have asthma, could struggle with it. That their parents need to be attentive to them. I'm just thinking, you motherfuckers, right? They made it look like kids are going to die, you know? It's like something really fucked up happened. Everything I said, the reason that I clicked on it, right? Clickbait. I got baited by fear porn. That's what it was. They made something normal seem abnormal, right? How many California fucking parents you think saw that? And that's what they're doing, right? They're addressing the DFW urban sprawl. And all these people migrating in from California and everywhere else that don't know what goes on here in North Texas. Routinely. Predictably. Well, I guess they learn now, right? I guess they learn now. I've actually got like orange spots of dust on my windshield here. Like dirty rain came down through this dust the other day and dried up on the windshield, and I haven't like wiped it off with the wiper blades yet. I see it right here, right? Guy's got his he got a black car next to me that was out in the rain. It's all covered in the shit. It's real. It happens. I've never even heard it being a problem for kids, you know, let alone like something deadly. Ha! Panic, fear, porn, porn, fear, porn. And speaking of porn, right? You know, this came up Sunday, right? Our priest's homily was all about, yeah, a multitude about our failings as human beings, right? Our weaknesses, our sin, as it is, right? Our sinful actions and activities, and you know, maybe a 10-minute homily on that stuff. And though there was maybe, let's just say, for around number 10 different articles that he addressed, he spent 90% of the time focused on porn, right? And as I say, knuckle fucking, right? He called it abusing oneself, right? That's your priest word for it. And you know, kids present, everything like that. By then, kids were already off in Sunday school, I believe, by then. But anyway, so his homily was about all of these transgressions of behavior, but really with an emphasis on pornography and, you know, yanking the crank, knuckle fucking. So we go from fear porn to actual porn. And, you know, for a second there, and I'll get into it. You know, I had like a very unique perspective of this church situation this last Sunday. I'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, as I'm up there listening to it, I'm thinking, yeah, you know, the priest is like speaking out to these people that, you know, nobody's out there in the Orthodox Church, you know, involved with pornography, right? I hope not, but I don't know. Then my mind started to want to think, all right, who's the one who's going to go home after church and like grab his shit and, you know. I stopped thinking that way, but the last thought I had as I trailed away from that, you know, was like, I don't even want to shake anybody's fucking hand now. Thinking what these possibilities may be, right? When I start thinking about, all right, who in this world's out there pulling their fucking pud, you know? I don't want to shake nobody's hand. I don't want to shake nobody's hand. And then that made me think about, And I finally got all the way through all four seasons of Star Trek : Enterprise, right? That is the version of Star Trek, which was the prequel to the original series, right? And now there's currently running another prequel. So this Star Trek Enterprise would actually be the first in the entire line of all the Star Trek spinoffs, right? Chronologically speaking. And when last I spoke in any kind of detail about Star Trek, I was probably into like the middle of the second season at that time. And like I was watching it and it was fine. It just hadn't really captivated me. So I'd watch an episode here, an episode there. But then I just started watching it more and more. I'm going to tell you what, just quick, let you know, if you ain't seen it, I never even heard of it, right? I'm not a big TV person, and I haven't been for a really long time. But fucking A, you know, of all the Star Treks, it's top three for sure. Absolutely fucking positively very good. Yeah, it's a very strange thing, you know, as far as television series are concerned. Usually they get quickly to what they're all about, and they kind of peek out. And then they have to, you know, do all kinds of writing tricks to kind of propagate through time and keep generating the income as they do, right? Everything is money-based in this world. And somewhere along the way you get to, and I probably brought it up before, the idea of jumping the shark, right? I'm not going to go into the whole background with that. Just to say jumping the shark is where you finally come up with some kind of idea that is so the fuck way out there that you've just gone beyond ridiculous, and now the rest of everything to come after is just stupid, and people start to just, you know, you've reached the conclusion, you've reached your creative capabilities as writers, and it's done, and it was probably done long before that, but you kept on dragging it out. Star Trek Enterprise, they cut it off before it was fucking done. They never got to a point where they jumped the shark. The writing just got better and better and better through season four. It was incredible. They changed their approach along the way, seamlessly, flawlessly, incredibly done, right? Some fucking top grade sci-fi. I was happy with it. I said that they cut it off, and the way they ended it, they kind of like truncated 3, 4, 5 years of the story that remained, right? To me, it looked like they cut it quick. They made a decision they weren't going to do it anymore, but there was still like 3, 4, 5 years of the story to be had. And still, the ending that they came up with, tremendous, right? Tremendous. I'm not going to blow it for anybody, but I say, if you're a Star Trek fan and you really didn't get into that, take a look at it. Fucking good, right? But anyway, and I bring that up because along the line there, and I think it was, I don't know what season it was, but there was, actually it was earlier on, I think it was season one maybe. In fact, I started going through it again. Just when it occurred to me, just, wow, this is really fucking good. And I didn't give it that kind of credit and respect initially. I'm going through it again, like the first two seasons, with a different perspective, right? So I think maybe it's something I saw recently again when I started going through season one. There was a particular episode where they were bringing some outer space alien species aboard their starship, and the captain, John Archer, approached like the first one with a handshake, and the guy just looked at him like, what the fuck, right? And that's what I thought. It's like every time somebody wants to shake my hand now, you know, after hearing a fucking sermon about jerking off, I'm just kind of gonna be like that alien. I don't know, I want to shake your hand, you know, I don't know, I want to shake your hand. Now you could scrub and scrub and wash all of everything off it, but you can't get rid of that sin. It's in there, you know. And I don't want that. I don't want it. I don't want you passing that shit to me. And this is not to say that I'm perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I'm far from it. You know, again, right before our liturgical services began, I had to pull the priest aside, so I got confession to make, right? And it involved my own vanity, right? My own vanity and as one of my shortcomings. And of course, he gets into this homily about our sins, our uncleanliness, or misbehaving. That came up in there. And also, you know, my other big failing is, if you looked at it in terms of seven deadly sins, right? My wrath, my anger, my quickness to anger, my volcanic anger, you know, or both of these things, both vanity and wrath, I've come a long way in the years, right? It's a lot thinner than it used to be, you know. I may have the wrath, but I don't any longer have the violence that goes along with it, you know. I'm not really like a fucking scary threat. I'm not a horror stomping around like I once was. And that's good. And like 99% of the wrath that I have and express involves driving in traffic, right? I'm a road rage kind of guy. Not to the point that I go off the fucking rails completely, right? But I get like that. I don't understand people. I don't get it. Like, I sort of kind of do. I just don't care. I don't care what the reasons are, what the excuses may be. You're fucked up and get out of my way. I got issues there. And but the vanity, right, kind of got in the way. See, I mentioned about a different perspective I had while attending church this past Sunday. I ended up serving at the altar, right? You know, in plain vernacular, I was more or less the adult version of an altar boy, right? Now, I was risen up through my youth as a Catholic, right? Roman Catholic up in Jersey. You know, my background is basically Eastern European on my father's side, Western European on my mother's side. So I got the Orthodoxy on the one hand, and I got the Roman Catholicism on the other, right? East and West. And since my father took up being atheistic, I didn't have Orthodoxy in my upbringing. Not much, you know, trickles of it from my grandmother on that side. Trickles of it from my aunt up in Canada when we were up there once a year. But otherwise, no, not really. But my mother, on the other hand, dragged me and my brother by the ear to Roman Catholic church services on Sunday mornings. And we've got our penance and our Holy Communion and did our CCD catechisms and got confirmed by the church and all that stuff, right? We did all that. But I never served as an altar boy, you know, and as an adult, I make a lot of joke about being an altar boy. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad. In fact, I got one, like, fucking badass, fucking nasty Roman Catholic altar boy fucking joke that if you ever meet me in person, pull me on the side and ask me to tell you that joke, I will, you know. And I'm not going to do it here. People who know me have heard it before, and they generally laugh, but it's really not a happy thing. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pedophile priests, but pedophile homosexuality priests, using their authority to abuse children. It's a well-known thing. This is not like conspiracy theory or anything like that, right? But no, I never served as an altar boy, so when I'm scratching my head trying to figure out, like, root cause of all the issues I had in my life, I could scratch that one off the list, right? Thankfully. Nonetheless, I had a very severe reaction to the Roman Catholic Church, a real hatred, right? And I don't know. Maybe somebody tried some shit with me once. I don't know. Whatever may have happened, we probably didn't, but may, you know, it's blocked out of my fucking brain. But anyway, so I was an adult version of an altar boy. And it, you know, it's something that I should have done months ago. I got that tap on my shoulder from the Holy Spirit. You know, it's like, you know, when you're a Christian person, the Spirit is calling on you to step up and do something, whatever it may be. You know what it's like. You know, you get that kind of nudge. For everybody, and I've had discussions with all kinds of people on this matter, you know, it's a certain way. People hear maybe clearly, like, words in their thoughts. Some people just feel this compulsion on the inside, like this kind of pushing. I call it a nudge. That's how I get it. There's just a variety of ways that people are moved by the Spirit to action, right? And I had been months and months ago. And at the same time, I had a couple friends of mine in the church come up with this idea about like forming up a ministry of a security team, right? Get a bunch of men together and guard the place whenever you're there, right? So we formed up this team. I ended up being in charge of it. I couldn't really get away. And every week, you know, every Sunday I'm in the church and it's like I'm being part of that. Not only am I not focused on the worship, but instead focused on security detail duties, I'm also not taking the step up to what this calling was that I was being nudged into doing, which was going up to the altar to serve, right? Now, going up as an adult altar boy to do that, and, you know, that's the beginning of a process that ends up, you know, being with, you're being a bishop, you know, if you just followed the whole chain, the hierarchical clergy chain all the way through, but it starts there. You start unknowing as a lay person, and you go up and serve at the altar. Serving at the altar just involves maybe praying for people, preparing bread for the communion, all kinds of little stuff, right? And, you know, I've managed to find, you know, all these reasons not to do it. First of all, it was that security detail. Then when the security detail had fizzled out after a couple of months, thankfully, I got back to worshiping. And I'll tell you what, I'm up front and center when it's that, you know. Otherwise, on security, I'm in the back, in a chair. Or I'm out patrolling, you know, away from worship and disconnected, really. Missing out. And, well, that was something that put me off for a couple of months there. And then since then, it's just been a matter of me. I get this idea in my head, and this is where the vanity comes into it, right? And why I needed to confess before I got up to the altar last Sunday. The vanity was that I'm not going up there until I am a picture-perfect human being, right? Like the Radiohead song Creep that I did a whole, like, episode 10 or 12 episodes back. So I don't want to get all into that, but there's a line in it, you know. I want a perfect body, I want a perfect soul, I want you to notice, you know. But this idea about being perfect, and then in me, that idea is being perfect before I step up before God and the church, you know. I want everybody to see me in a very good light up there. I want to be worthy. And, you know, my wife told me, it's like, no, God's not looking for you to be perfect. He's looking for the opposite, you know. He'll take from you and make you into what he wants you to be. And like, da-ding, you know, I got it now. And then, you know, that morning, heading into, you know, getting up and getting ready for church, I had another nudge. You know, my wife added additional wind to that sail, and she's a good woman. You know, she's a good woman. Yeah, so it was a very regrettable delay because, you know, all I needed to do was shut the fuck up, put that vain thinking aside, put that wrongful ministry behind, and get with what I was called to do, right? Shut up and show up and let everything happen. Let God take care of the rest. Now, you know, I keep on guarding myself in that situation as a an adult altar boy, and that's not untrue, but there's actually a word that we use in Orthodoxy, which is a word that I've only heard before in reference to a cult type of groups and gatherings. So again, another instance where, you know, Satan steals from the church. But what I'm called when I'm up there is an acolyte, right? Acolyte. Not Bud Light, not Miller Light, not Coors Light. Acolyte. Acolyte. What's an acolyte? Dictionary definition. A person who assists the celebrant in the performance of liturgical rites. There you go. So now I am an acolyte. To add to all the other things that people call me, good, bad, and indifferent. So my first experience as an acolyte was unbelievable, life-changing moment. I'm not going to stand here or sit here and tell you that, like, I observed some kind of miracle that completely like zapped me and changed me as a person. No, just the very presence in what was going on. It was like being allowed into a place amongst people that heretofore there was no chance that I'd ever be permitted such a thing. You know, I can't even really put into words what was going on. That aspect of it is factual, right? That's as much as I can really reckon. But probably the simplest way to put it is that for once in my life, I had my 2 feet standing squarely in a place where I fucking A, belonged. I've always been a misfit in my life. I've always had a hard time getting along with others, right? I'm that kid with the report card in first grade, you know. Teacher writes a little comment on the side of my substandard grade, my substandard performance, has difficulty getting along with others. I'm one of those types, and that's why I do a monologue, right? Because I can't get nobody to actually talk with me. I'm all by myself out here. But it was one of those moments in my stupid life where I was exactly where I am supposed to be. And I don't need to know the whys and hows of it all. I just know that that is where I was supposed to be. And I regret that I should have been there months ago. Months ago. So my life is a little delayed, whatever's coming down the road, you know? And I'll tell you what, man, ever since then, I have just been like a couple notches elevated in my mood and my emotions and my energy, my outlook. It just, that's what I mean. If I call it life changing. It just changed. It took me out of whatever rut I was in and just kind of set me differently, you know? Picked me up and placed me down in just a better fucking place. And that's part of like an entire Lenten weekend, right? We are into our Lent period in the Orthodox Church. And so we're in the Lent fast, which is a little bit stricter than most other Christian approaches to fasting. And, after a week where I basically didn't eat during the week, I fucked up one day. And, you know, eating the vegan diet, basically, it's no meat, no dairy, with the exception of shellfish, right? Not that that's dairy, but meat. And I think I've explained this before. I don't really want to get into it. That's not the point. But, you know, I always suffer as a result of these fasts because I end up eating more food than I normally do. I eat all kinds of crazy food that I don't normally eat. I get loaded with sugar and carbs, and I feel like crap, gain weight, all that. You know, and I dread when we have these fasts. And my solution this time is just do what you always do. Just do what you always do. Just fucking don't eat all week. You know, go 5, 6, 7 days without eating, and then just eat this stuff, right? So that's kind of what I did the first week, except I failed on Wednesday, you know, kind of ruined the progress of everything. But I picked up late Saturday, I ate, and then Sunday after church, we ate, and, you know, I did it by the book. I'm doing a little bit more than by the book. I'm going completely sugar-free, right? I took the sugar out of everything just to make sure, you know. Like during the holiday, I've gained weight. This is the problem here, right? And maybe it's coming up a little bit too much in my monologues, but I've been fighting with myself. I've been fighting with myself because during the holidays, I gained like 10 pounds of bad weight. And, you know, during the holidays, it was loaded with, you know, pecan pie and cookies and pierogies and just all kinds of shit I don't need to be eating, right? But I can. I learned that I can. So it's like, well, I can. And it's been a long time. Let's go for it. And I'm now paying the price for it. And I'm having a hard time, like, really just knocking all that back down. I really need to do, like, a 12, 14-day fast to get right again. And, you know, I managed to put together 7, 5, 6, 4. But I'm really not making the progress quick enough that I need to. And I'm not really quite right. I'm still a little bit over what I call my fighting weight. So I'm kind of redesigning this Lent fast to make sure I don't eat garbage when I do eat, right? Now, all the carb food to me is pretty much garbage anyway, but true garbage is anything that has chemicals and sugar, right? Sucrose sugar. And I'm not really being too finicky about chemicals. I'm trying to bring it down to whole food level as much as I can do, but there's going to be exceptions. But sugar, absolutely not. You know, just fuck that. And I don't know. I lived that way for years, and I know, you know, you really got to look and look again, like reading the ingredients labels on all these manufactured goods. And, you know, you do that. Go in a store. Just try to make yourself like a little basket full of food that don't have sugar in it, right? You know, especially where it's not whole food, like a tomato or a potato or a hunk of meat, right? Anything off the shelf that somebody has mixed and prepared, you know, that's not a whole food. Read the label and tell me how much of the shit don't have sugar in it, right? There's sugar in fucking everything. Everything's got sugar in it. Shit you wouldn't even think of's got sugar in it. You know, I'm wondering last week, like I mentioned about how I failed, right? I failed on Wednesday to carry through my fasting period that I had set up for myself, which was weird because there's no problem for me to go 5 days without food. It's, you know, I was going 6 or 7, but even just 5 would have been fine. There's no problem doing that. I do it so frequently, right? Nothing to it. I couldn't do it. I just could not for the life of me do it. I couldn't get to, what was it? Even day 3, I needed to get to day 4 to be cleaned out. I couldn't even get to day 3. I believe Monday I had eaten also. I had the day off from work, so it was like kind of truncated week. Weird, right? But like at the end of day 2, I was just like, and I'm going to use the word, jonesing. It's like I needed a fix. Which was fucked up because I was sugar free, right? I was sugar free during the weekend. I didn't even eat shrimp, right? I was actually vegan and sugar-free. All I had was, you know, ranch beans that we concoct with peppers and onions and extra garlic and more mustard, you know. And what else did we have? You know, I probably ate grapes, which is a lot of fructose, but not sucrose, right? And that's not a problem. We found sugar-free tortillas. In fact, to my surprise, we went through a bunch of tortillas on the shelf in the store the other day, and most of them don't have sugar in it. I was like, okay. I thought for sure that they were just loaded with it, like bread is. Nope. So tortillas are actually decent sugar-free food, you know, but definitely read the labels. Don't take my word for it, if that matters to you. Different brands may vary, obviously. But so that's, we were eating basically these ranch bean tortillas and grapes and, you know, unsalted, natural mixed nuts. What else? I don't know, maybe some salad fixings. But it was sugar-free, right? No, we're in a store the other day and we're, you know, looking to buy some more stuff to eat that fits this diet plan that we're into. And, you know, we're in the section, the aisle that has like all the canned vegetables. We're standing in front of all the variety of beans. Like in Texas, beans is a big thing, right? It just is. So there's a whole variety, all different kinds of them. It's half a fucking aisle, you know, beans. And I go in for this, these pinto beans that are called ranch beans, ranch style beans. That's what they're called. Like that's the manufacturer and everything, ranch style beans. And, like, I make them homemade, too, right? Soak a pot of pinto beans and just, you know, I know what the ingredients are generally in there. But what I didn't realize, I was standing, my wife was looking for something. I just grabbed the can of these and I just looked at it and I started reading the ingredients just to be sure, you know. It's like, I don't know, why would you put sugar in ranch beans, right? They put sugar in ranch beans. I was like, fuck you, ranch beans. What the fuck is this? I was mad. Now, you see, what happened was, I ate myself, I don't, God knows how many cans of this shit, right, over the weekend, when that's pretty much all you're eating, you're going to eat it, right, and a lot of it. So I'm just filling myself up with sugar, thinking the whole time that I'm avoiding it. And no wonder, 2 days into a fast, I'm like jonesing for a fix because fucking sucrose is some kind of godforsaken narcotic. It truly is. I don't get that same reaction with like fructose or lactose or any other os. But man, sucrose, it's a fucking drug. And, I was just like, urgh. Because I love ranch style beans. I love them and I eat them all the time. Nope. They put sugar in that crap. So now it's going to be like, well, we found cans, you know, that don't have sugar in it. Even just store brand shit. Like, just, they're fucking beans. You know, my wife likes to get the refried. I like to get, like, the whole pinto bean. We usually mix them together. We'll fry them in a pan. And we'll make, like, this kind of crazy, modified, thinned out, wussy version of what I call acid beans, right? Acid beans. The idea with acid beans is you're taking ranch beans, but you put, like, habaneros and jalapenos and a lot of them to it. You make it blazing, blistering, painfully fucking hot, right? And I often will make them homemade, too. Again, soak the beans myself and do it all from scratch. But this is what, you know, acid beans. It's my concoction, and it's basically just very fiery, hot chili pepper ranch-style beans. And, oh, man. And you eat them. It's like, now, you get, like, there's nothing special in Texas beans. Like, you, when you eat beans, you get gas, right? You get plenty of gas, and it's explosive and volatile and... But when you add, like, habanero and all kinds of chili peppers to it, it's like fire come out, right? It's like fire come out. It's like a fire-breathing dragon ass. You get that, dragon ass. Like when you're tired, you drag your ass, and you got dragon ass. But when you eat the acid beans, you get little, like, fire-breathing dragon ass. And... Now, when you're making it, the idea is to make them so good that you keep eating them in spite of how hot they are going in and how hot they are going out. You know? Man. And on the idea, on those lines, like jalapenos and hot peppers, and spicy things, spicy hot. In the refrigerator, my wife had a big jug of the V8 spicy hot. Right, so you get the spicy hot, but they heat it up with the chili peppers. And I'll tell you, like, I don't drink calories. That's one of my rules for staying slim, right? I just drink water and coffee. And in my coffee, I don't add milk and sugar and all that, right? So I don't drink calories generally, but one of the things I will do and deviate from that basic premise on occasion is I will swig down an ice-cold V8 spicy hot. And it's really one of my favorite things. It's really, really fucking good. And she had it there in the refrigerator, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't know much about the V8, but I do know that Campbell's Soup Company makes it. So, odds are it's probably loaded with all kinds of fucking garbage, right? Including that sucrose, that table sugar, that drug, that fucking narcotic that I'm trying to avoid. So I grab it and I read the label. Boy, that label was just crystal clear. It's just all good stuff. And ain't no sugar. I was like, wow. All right. Duly noted. One of my favorite things to drink is actually good stuff. But, you know, Campbell's, on the other hand, the soup company, and that's a Jersey thing, right? You know, like, I come from New Jersey originally, so does the Campbell soup in my aisles here in Texas. They had a Camden, which is like Newark's big ugly brother. Camden's one of the worst, most dangerous, crime-ridden, murder-fucking cities in the entire country, and has been for a long time. It's not a good place. It's across the Delaware River from Philadelphia, right? You got the shitty part of Philadelphia on the west, and you got urban sprawl to the east across the river. It's a very, very bad area in this country. But that's, you know, that's it. I mean, I guess that city grew up on Campbell's, which is a staple of people's diets and has been for a very long time, Campbell's soup. But of course, you know, a week or two, I was going through the labels that we have, cans of soup in the pantry and shit like that. Just preparing for the Lenten fast to come and the sugar-free aspect of it that I'm adding to it here. Just to make sure that none of that soup has any sugar in it. And they all do. Every can of every different flavor that I looked at had it. And I was just like, fuck this. That sucks. And so now we got soup that's going to sit there for a while. And, the sugar in soup, for fuck's sake. Why? I don't know. I don't know. When I make homemade soup, the last thing I'd ever think to put in it would be sugar. But there you go. Something else hot and spicy that happened over the weekend that was a really nice surprise, right? We went to a gun show, right? Texas gun show at the world famous South Fork Ranch, right? From the TV, what did I call it? Nighttime soap opera that was famous in the late 70s and all through the 80s. One of the most famous television shows ever made, right? Dallas, with J.R. Ewing and the Ewing family. That South Fork Ranch, right? It's just up the road from here. We pass it all the time. But they have events up there. I mentioned probably earlier about a flea market they do once a month. It's what, the third Monday trade days. We go there every other month or so. Well, really about every month. But when the winter months come and it's kind of shitty out, why bother, right? But they're out there doing it anyway. But they also do, I think it's every month, I'm not positive. I got to check on that. A gun show, right? And a pretty decent sized gun show, right? Two big old rooms and a lot to see. Pretty good as far as gun shows go, but we go there. It's gun and knife, right? When you see a gun show, it's a gun and a knife show. But everybody just calls it gun show. I was actually going for knives. I was looking for knife stuff, knives I could use for work that makes sense. And just to see what they got there. See what that gun show is in particular. What kind of stuff. I do ammo reloading, so is there ample supplies up there to make it worth the bother when I get back into making bullets? Which I haven't done for a few months. Maybe get into that later. But what we didn't expect to find was food items, right? There was a table, actually a couple of tables, two old women, they do homemade pickles, right? They got just jars and jars of pickles, and then they had like all kinds of relish stuff and jellies and shit like that on the other end. But they had like two long tables just full of a variety of pickles. And I sifted through them just looking for the plain dill ones. And now here we go. Gave it to my wife, and she picked up some more for herself. And she picked up one that was hot and spicy. It was basically a dill pickle. But it also had like a bunch of, garlic and like jalapeno in it, and fucking hey, those were good. I mean, they tasted dill, but they had the heat like the jalapeno. They're fucking good, hot and spicy pickles. I can't remember the names of their little outfit, unfortunately. I probably have it on the label of their jars at home. People like that, they do this kind of stuff, they make their, it's not like they have big industry or anything like that, they just do what they do, and they go out to flea markets, gun shows, farmers markets, but man, that shit's good. They're expensive, a jar of pickles for $10, that's a lot. You can get a jar of pickles, like a store brand for like $1.80, some shit like that in a supermarket, so it's a lot of money, but they're good. We're going to treat ourselves. We're going to do this Lent diet that is, pseudo-vegan, but for the shellfish. Well, let's just up it. We'll take this crap that we don't want to be eating generally and just go a little top shelf here and there, right? Make it worth the bother. So, yeah, we were at the South Fork Ranch Gun Show where we got those pickles and little else. I ended up walking out of it with a pocket knife. And, she got a nice purse, Nice looking, the right size. It was exactly what she's looking for. People like do leather crafting and things like that. You can, at these kind of places, you'll buy purses and belts and wallets and holsters and knife sheaths and things like that. Usually you'll find a couple of guys who are doing that. And she found a rack of purses that were up there. She grabbed one of them. Now, I don't know what the quality is going to be on it or anything like that, but as far as the size and fit, it suits her. So, you know, it's a good looking thing. We'll just have to see how well the threading holds up, what the shelf life is on that thing. I got no reason to think it's not good, except for it was only $45 and it was a pretty significant amount of leather that should have cost more than that. So I'm thinking it might not have been like made in some guy's garage. It might have been like some Chinese shit, you know. But we'll see. Of course, I've got the tools and limited capability to shore it up if necessary, so she might have done well. And, so we didn't really walk out of there with much. No gun stuff, right? No gun stuff. Don't really need any gun stuff. You get to that point eventually where you just got what you need. And, maybe we got to get our asses out to the range and shoot some of it off and then go and resupply, but. I walked out of there, and I had this kind of sense of disillusionment. It was just weird. I really couldn't put a finger on it at the time. It's like, it's a gun show. So you get the kind of people at gun shows that are basically gun people, right? It's sort of kind of a culture unto itself in this country, albeit a humongous one, right? Now, you're talking probably half the population or more gun people. And it's probably more. But, to be kind of gathered together in one place, it's sort of unusual, right? Sort of unusual. Most places you go are more often a cross-section of our societies. But a gun show, not so much, you know. You get pretty much a certain kind of people with a certain commonality to them. And I don't know. In spite of like being in and amongst people that my wife and I should be suited to and suited with, I just had this kind of sense about me, like, I may like guns and knives and leather and pickles, but there's something about the people that just, they didn't feel like brethren to me, you know. And it may be a matter of like that sense of brotherhood, you know, that my kinship with people is not really based on whether or not you're into guns and knives, right? My real kinship with people is at the level of faith. You know, how do we connect in matters of faith? I got friends, a good buddy of mine who is, he reloads ammo, right? He reloads ammo. And that's one of the things that we do together. We exchange supplies. We work together on projects. He's a little bit more into it than I am. I've just been absent with it, like I keep saying, right, over the past few months. But that's not all we have in common, right? We have 12-step fellowship in common. We got motorcycles in common. Yes, we have faith in the Lord Jesus Christ in common. And so that we're both gun and knife people. We're this other stuff too. And like I said, in that chain of other things, it does come down to faith. And I regard 12-step fellowship as faith. We relate. That's a faithful relationship. That is, I regard like my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, a 12-step program, as kind of like a nursery school for my Christianity to come later, right? Those were where I was getting like my first baby steps into faith. So it's a faith thing to me, without getting all into that. But I did not feel that kind of commonality in that room. You know, it was a sensory thing. It was a sensory perception thing, where I wasn't feeling something that I would normally feel when I'm amongst people who I've expect a sense of kinship with. It's really hard to put this shit into words and express my point. I hope I'm doing well with it, but I just had this sense of disillusionment, and it an exclamation point kind of come to it. Now, let me get to that in a second. I told you I walked out, with a knife, and the knife I got was my very first cold steel, right? And the reason I went for that was it's the same buddy I'm talking about. The guy who reloads ammo and has all these things in common with me, he's also a knife guy. And, you know, when we talk about knives, he always talks about this company. It's a California company called Cold Steel, right? Cold Steel. That's kind of like his go-to, his priority. That's like the make that he really likes. And in my collection of knives, I have absolutely zero Cold Steel knives. And so I kind of got in the back of my head that maybe the next knife I'm going to get, because I don't really need another knife. I'm to the point now where the knives I buy, I'm buying for the work I do. I buy everyday carry knives, which adds up to being pocket knives, right? I just put a pocket knife in my back pocket, and I'll put a clip on it, right? So it's in my back pocket on the right. I can reach in there with one hand, and I get the type that you can handle one-handed, opening, closing, you know, really quick. Predominantly, I'm at work, so predominantly I use them for work. That's what I need. So I'm always looking for another knife that does that, right? But I like knives, and like, you know, fucking sucrose, table sugar, and drugs and everything, alcohol. It's sort of an addiction. Like, once you get into knives, you always want another one, and it's hard to, like, to hold back. And I just about walked out of that place without a knife, right? Because I know, I more or less know what I'm looking at when I'm in there, and I'm shopping around. And I know when people are trying to screw me and shit, generally. And but I did find this one knife on this one. Actually, I found this one knife on two different tables. The first table I was at, the woman was trying to sell it to me, I don't know, for like $65. And, you know, I liked it. I considered it. And I just thought, you know, I got like five of these everyday carry / work related knives in queue, right? Like, they're all there as backups to when the one I'm carrying currently wears out. These things don't wear out for a long fucking time. You know, I'll never get through all these knives in my stupid life. I won't. All right? I've got actually like two of the exact same knives. I like those two so much. That one particular knife so much. I bought a second one just to make sure I can always have it. Just in case, you know, you lose one or it breaks or you finally wear the edge off it, whatever. And so I got plenty. I didn't really have a need. And I was like, you know, and we were just getting started. We were at our first, like, maybe our third or fourth table at that point as we were getting started to our tour around the gun show. So I put it down, you know. It's like, well, all right, for $65, I could get this, what it was, a Cold Steel AD-10, right? And I could get it for $65, but like these other knives, the ones I got two of, for $64, I could buy those for, you know, all day online. I buy them online and they come to me and they cost the same. You know, they're very similar, except they're all from Taiwan, which I'm acceptable. See, I got principles. I won't buy Chinese shit on purpose, as much as I can do anyway. And when it comes to knives, I got control over that, right? I got my reasons, and that's just how I roll. And your experience may differ. If it does, hey, fuck you, you know? It doesn't really matter. But that's how I am, right? That's how I am about it. There's certain things, that are not knives that I just can't not get away with buying. Like this microphone I'm talking into. They're coming from China. There's nowhere else they come from, right? It is what it is. I can't not do it. But if I can control it, I control it. With knives, I generally can. All right, both of these Cold Steel AD-10s, and then it's a Boker, what is it, AK-47 double XL Kalashnikov. All right, it's an automatic knife, you know, it's a full, you know, push button, out the side open, full on fucking like 6-inch bow. It's a big ass pocket knife, right? And it's bad. You know, it takes a big dude to carry that knife. I love them, right? They got a smaller version of it that sells for like $50 to $55. Same knife, just a little smaller. I bought one for my father-in-law for a birthday present a couple months back. And a nice knife, you know. I'd carry that around also. but I don't have that small one. But they had, this woman had the small one, and she was trying to sell it for like $80. I was like, you can get the big one. She's like, I thought, you know, you can get the big one for $64 all day, every day at Blade HQ and, you know, those kind of big online knife retailers, right? She's like, I thought this was the big one. I mean, there's a smaller one. No, this is, there may be a smaller one than this, but this ain't the big one. The big one's a double XL, you know? I turn around, I got a big hole in my pocket for how deep that thing goes. I've wore like a hole through my jeans pocket. I just happened to have that pair of jeans on that day, you know, carrying those things around all the time. Like, you get this for $64. She's trying to argue with me. Well, you can't. That, you might have been able to do that, but you can't do that now. I just bought the fucking thing like 2-3 months ago. You know, so don't bullshit me. The economy sucks. But the availability of stuff isn't getting, isn't in decline. It's actually coming back from where it had been during COVID with all the shutdowns and lockups and all that crap, right? So she was full of shit and trying to rip me off and anybody else who came through her table, you know? Now, I didn't know to deal with the cold steel AD-10. If I had any idea what that knife was, I'd have thought, holy shit, what a great deal, because it turns out that is a $150 knife and up, you know. MSRP on it is $220. But you could buy it from these retail outlets online in the area between $155 and $175. So it is, even though it's from Taiwan, it's the shit. It's the real fucking deal. It's not full automatic, right? It's not even spring assist. It's just, it's got a little push pin on it. You open it with your thumb, one hand, and flip it open, depending on the tension that you have set on. It's a screw. A really nice knife. Felt great in the hand. Perfect size, great ergonomics. A little heavy for smaller people, but not for me, right? I'm used to even a bigger knife than that anyhow. Yeah, I call that a mid-size pocket knife to me. The blade, what's the blade? 3.5, 3.75, something like that. I think it's just shy of the length of like a $110. But it's a tall blade, right? From bottom to top, from the blade edge to the spine on the back. It's sizable. It's pushing 2 inches. It's 1.5 to 2 inches in there. And I like knives like that. You know, to me, those are just full-on useful. General purpose knives, and I'm a general purpose jack of all trades kind of dude. So it was just a good knife for me. This is a drop point, you know, it's kind of like a small Bowie knife, and gorgeous, just really great, you know. And it had some unique locking mechanics in it that I wasn't familiar with, and but I didn't know, you know, I didn't know standing there at that woman's table holding that knife in my hand that I was holding a $150 to $200 knife that she was trying to sell for $65 that I was giving her shit for, because I could tell that she was ripping me off on the Boker knife, right? So she must be ripping me off on this cold steel. They're both Taiwan knives. Why would this one be so much more than the other one? And I did not know. But anyway, I put it down, kind of a little disappointed in her, you know. I was reading her by assessing prices on shit that I knew. So I looked at her as a shyster. And, you know, don't you know, at another table, I found a guy selling the same fucking knife. And I said, how much you want for it? He said, 50. Just 50, like that. I was like, 50? He's like, yeah. There's a woman at a table over there selling the same fucking knife for $65. And I tell him the whole story with all the Boker knives and the pricing and everything like that, how I concluded that she was trying to rip me and everybody else off. Now, here you are selling it for $50. Now, to me, a folder pocket knife made in Taiwan, yeah, it should be about $50 or so. $50, you know, maybe $60, depending, you know. At best, could be less than that. But the guy didn't take credit cards, debit cards. Sometimes it's like that at these kind of shows, you know. I was like, oh, fuck it. I didn't have the money on me in cash, so I walked away from it. But, you know, the rest of the time I was in there, I wasn't finding anything else. And I was like, man, yeah, I really kind of like that knife, you know. Still not knowing about it. Still not knowing what the price actually is, what it goes for. And I was just like, you know what? Let's see if we can find an ATM. And we found an ATM. And I took the cash. I went back there. And I bought it, right? Gave up the money. Took the knife. Walked out of there. And I walked out of there, you know, with mixed feelings. A, that, like I explained before, that sense of disillusionment I had in and amongst guns and knife people. And B, a little bit of a sense of elation that I had kind of pulled one off, that I had gotten away with a really good knife for a cheap price. Because, you know, as we're walking out, I got the phone out and I'm looking at it and I'm getting an idea what the pricing is. I'm like, check this out. They're selling this for $150. Check this out. They want $220 for this over here. I got this fucking knife for $50. Like, yeah, yeah. You know, dealing like with flea markets and vendors and shit, you always feel like you got butt raped, you know? And here I felt like, yeah, I got away with one. Little did I know, right? And I found out later because, you know, I wanted to find out about the knife, and I'm watching these YouTube videos. You find a lot of knife culture people out there, knife nuts, whatever they call themselves. They do a lot of product reviews, and the manufacturers will give them knives to test and give them knives for free, maybe slip them cash. You know, you got to be careful about these reviews also. But still, there's certain facts that you can glean whether or not they have bias, you know. And then you can glean whether or not they have bias also. That becomes evident as you watch enough of them. But, you know, YouTube, I do a search. I put up Cold Steel AD10 knife, and all these results come back, and I start going through the videos, and one by one, these people are just, like, drooling over this knife, like it's the best fucking pocket knife they ever found, right? And it may look expensive to you, but I'm telling you, this is, like, the best fucking knife. And I'm like, oh, man, I did great. $50, I got this very expensive knife that these people are swearing up and down. It's totally well worth the money at the actual, you know, like, manufacturers' retail suggestions. And then all of a sudden I come to this video. How did it go? The Cold Steel AD10. I got skunked, is what he said, right? I'm like, what the fuck is this? I watch this guy's video, and he talks about how there is a market of counterfeit knives, right? And as soon as I understood what he was talking about, my heart sang. I just, like, counterfeit knives, for fuck's sake. What else are these scumbags in this fucking world going to come up with, right? You know, you go from fucking sugar in the ranch beans and sugar in fucking tomato soup and, you know, and now you got counterfeit knives. People will just do anything in this stupid world. If you got the skills and materials to make knives, why don't you just make the fucking knives and put your own label on it? You're going to counterfeit others, right? Apparently people do that. Now, I've never run into this. For all the knives I've been collecting for all this time, all these years, and I always buy from, like, the same buyers. In the beginning, I might get something at flea markets and shit and not know it, but it was really like, I need a knife and I need it now to do some particular thing, right? It looked like it would do, and I wouldn't pay no more than like $20, $25 for it. So if you fucked me, you fucked me. You didn't fuck me for much, right? So I'm watching this video, and the guy's like showing you how you recognize whether or not your Cold Steel AD10 is a counterfeit. And of course, I checked every box on the fucking checklist. I got me a $50 counterfeit knife, which I gotta say, at this point, a couple days in with use, it's still a killer fucking knife. Whoever, like, duplicated it, replicated it, they copied something that was really good. And now I got what appears to be a really good knife, except, you know, the only thing, it's probably not the right kind of steel. It's probably some kind of shitty metal that ain't going to hold up through time. But otherwise, it's really good. Now, for $50, it's like I didn't really get ripped off all too bad, you know? It just depends on the durability over time with it. We'll see. But, you know, it turned out, I started shopping around. I was pissed. Like, if I'm going to get a cold steel, I'm doing it because that's what my buddy recommends. If I go and buy one and it turns out to be a counterfeit, I still don't have a cold steel. I still don't fucking have one. This knife I held in my hand, I said, this is going to be a good, useful knife for me. I already knew that was the one I want, but I wasn't going to spend $220. I didn't even want to spend $150 because now it's, you know, I'm spending $200 if I spend $150. If I could just find it for like $100, then it ends up being $150 expended. Plus, I end up with this fucking knockoff, right? On top of it. So it's like I get the real thing. And lo and behold, I shopped around just enough and I found a reliable and trusted distributor, right? It's a hunting and fishing and shooting distributor out of Columbia, Missouri, named Midway USA. And I've been buying shit for them for like the last fucking 12 years or so. When I started getting into ammo reloading and buying gun stuff and really more of the reloading, right? They have all kinds of supplies there, right? You pay it just a tiny fraction more than other places perhaps. But I'll tell you, they got it. Their customer service is excellent. Their shipping and receiving is on the spot, you know. I have never had issue with them. These people are just fucking grade A, right? Midway USA. Do not be afraid to buy from them. For whatever reason, they are selling these Cold Steel AD-10 knives for $99. It's like they must have bought a boatload of them, and they're just trying to get rid of them. I went through all the comments and reviews, just making sure that they're not selling shit, that they're not aware that they're selling shit. And the people in the know, absolutely, these are not those fucking knockoffs. They're absolutely not. I know what I know. I know what I'm buying. I know what I'm looking at. I know what the counterfeit knives look like and telltale signs. And just review after review after review. Everybody's got the same concern because the price is ridiculous. That's basically anywhere from what? Half price to what, 25% off, anywhere between 25% and 50% off. Actually, fuck that. No, it's between 50% and 100% off of the pricing, depending on the original purchase price that you may be comparing it to. That's significant, you know, that you're looking at two for the price of one, basically, right? So, I ordered one from Midway for basically $100, and I got the $50 knockoff. The real one's going to come in a couple of days, I'm sure. And we golden. You know, now I talk about the ammo reloading. It comes up. That's my one of my dormant hobbies right now. I can't get around to it with everything I've been doing for the past year. You know, I've been spending that time redoing an entire bedroom and turning it into an office. And once I get the office up and running, there's so many other hobbies that I had not been able to get into while all my computer stuff was boxed up, while all my recording stuff for music was boxed up. And it's, you know, now I'm able to do that. So I'm like trying to attack those fronts. And meanwhile, I've got shit sitting out in my workshop that, I got like all kinds of spiders on guard duty out there, just making sure everything is copacetic in my world while I'm absent, right? The neglectful absentee parent of all my hobbies. I got so many dang hobbies, right? Obviously collecting knives and doing this ammo reloading stuff. But you know, with the ammo reloading, it's just the guns and shooting, right? The gun culture I was talking about. You kind of get your own sort of collection. I'm not going to call myself like a collector, a quote unquote collector, because those are high-end, top-shelf type of people. I don't. I get like all the bottom-shelf stuff, but I have a collection of them, right? And there's always room for more somehow. I like knives, like they're kind of addictive. So are the guns. They are. Just something about weapons, I guess. So that's another hobby of mine. Obviously, guitars, I mentioned. I got, what, 7 of them now with the bass I just picked up recently. And with that, music production, right, I mentioned that. I got digital interface, right, MIDI interface, and I play into one thing, and it routes into the computer, and then I compose the music, and da-da-da-da-da. So it's music production / composition. Now I'm doing this podcasting, obviously. You're listening to podcasting. I started doing that a couple of months ago. And that requires the computers for, well, a variety of things. You know, you got the post-production stuff, and then also the websites that they get uploaded to, right? And one of those websites is my own website, so I'm doing, you know, website development, design, maintenance on that. Which is another hobby, has been. It used to be actually a profession of mine back in the day. And then I mentioned earlier, you know, with my buddy, we're into motorcycles. I got a Harley out there in the workshop, you know, with all the spiders and everything out there. I mentioned about leather crafting, right? My wife bought the purse. I'll be able to shirt up if necessary, get some extra threading in there, whatever materials. I know just enough about that shit to be able to do something like that without fucking it all up. So, yeah, that's a hobby. To this point, I've made a bunch of knife sheaths, right? Custom ones. The first couple of them were kind of hack jobs, but I started getting good at it. I made some pretty decent ones, you know, pretty respectable. I don't do all the, like, the fancy design and shit. They're very plain, but they're structurally sound, you know. Good. I mean, I could be proud of them. I need to get myself into holsters, and I'm not getting around to that hobby either. Again, that hobby exists outside, out in the workshop, and I'm not getting anything in the workshop done at this point in time. Everything has been in the office this winter so far, and last summer, really, while I was building the room, right, and refurbishing furniture and all that crap. I guess you could call that another hobby, too. I don't look to do that. I do that as needed. And right now, I don't as need any of that. I'm good. I'm good, and I don't really want to do any of that shit for a while, if I can avoid it. I got myself a shortwave radio. I start getting into that, and I'm not really at the shortwave end of it. I put a little attention to it for about 2 weeks, back around Christmas time. But it's there, and there's some development to go with that. So just radio in the general, I'm starting to get into. Of course, through the years, gardening a little bit. I'm not like a master gardener or anything like that. I'll plant like peppers and shit like that, but I like to do it. I like to do it. Had a bad year last year, but the year before had a pretty good year, right? And you know, prior to that, when I lived in Tennessee, I raised chickens, so that's a hobby of mine, building all their coops, everything like that, like developing flock. I love that shit. Chickens are fun. It's a fun thing, you know, fun thing. You start getting all the eggs and everything. I enjoyed that. I was sickened that I had to sell it all off when I did, you know. Other hobbies of mine, theological studies and papers and teaching, you know, Bible teaching, that whole line of stuff. I got a natural aptitude. Who knew, right? But I love doing it. And really, when I get into doing that, I start getting, like, centered, like, spiritually centered. Like I was talking about being up at the altar, I finally found my 2 feet in a place where they ought to be planted, and I should be standing. I was in the right place at the right time. For once in my stupid life, right? Well, to a lesser degree, when I get in front of a computer and I start writing some kind of paper involving the Bible and theological studies, I'm in my zone, right? I may not be in my right place, but I'm in my fucking zone. My frame of mind just centers around what really matters really quick, suddenly, when I get into that. It's an important thing for me to observe about myself. And on those lines, just creative writing in general, right? You know, when I was still like Antichrist motherfucker, I had started into the process a couple of times into making fictional sci-fi / horror. Actually, it should be horror / sci-fi / adventure, maybe / mystery type of stories, right? I never finished them through to really know how they all dial up. None of them would really be so much sci-fi. I don't really get into all that technical, like, futuristic stuff. I don't. It's not that I hate it or anything like that, but I don't like to write about that crap. I tend to go back in time and write that and write stories around people and places, you know. but they got a certain kind of horror edge to them. Perhaps I read too much Stephen King in the past. I don't write like Stephen King, and it don't read like Stephen King, I don't think. But I'll tell you what, I'll let you decide, because look, I found, you know, it's something, because I told my wife about this. Once upon a time, I was making this story, and I had this character that did this, right? And this conversation coming up with my wife. And when I was developing that book, I was several chapters into it, and I had developed, shit, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, 12 characters, and that's about as far along as I ever got with one of them. But somehow, I lost everything. I don't have any of those files, right? Well, don't you know, when I got all plugged in, got my computers up and running again after I got the office all together, a couple of weeks later, recently, like within the past 2 weeks, I stumbled across a handful of those files. I found 5 of the opening chapters that start setting the tone for some of the characters in this story. It's going to be a huge, fat, fucking 1,000-pager, you know? Which, and I don't even know where it was going to end, but I had all these spreadsheets and all this data and the research I did. You know, writing a novel is not an easy task. There's a lot that goes into it, right? The best of it is that I have a wide variety, a very diverse background. I've gone through this world and I've tried a lot of things. So, like, I can write from a lot of personal perspective, which is really cool. But there's still a lot of research that you got to do. You got to make sure that you're speaking correctly so you could come off, at least if you're not authentic, at least come off as authentic, right? People who know are going to know. So you got to dot those I's and cross those T's. There's a lot that goes into it. So I had all these files, and I had all like the storylines of all these different characters and where they crossed in time. And like, I have none of it. But I found a couple of like notepad files that just had like the like half of the original characters' initial chapters, right? So what a treat. I mean, for me, anyway, and I don't know. My wife has yet to see them. And you know, the only person who ever saw them was an ex of mine back in the day, you know, when I was writing them, right? The person who I was with at that time. And she thought they were great. So there might be something to it. You know, there might be something to it. So I got an idea in my head what I'm going to do here. It's going to be on the lines of, you know, like coming soon. Maybe like beginning with the next episode here on Post-Arlen Monologics, what I'm loosely referring to, at least in my own thoughts, as Uncle Maverick's Bedtime Stories, right? I think what I'm going to do is for the next 5 podcasts, I'm going to do what I normally do, my monologics, but each one of them is going to include one of these chapters, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it to you, right? I'm going to guess most of them are in the area about 10 minutes in length just to read them. One of them is kind of significantly shorter. One of them might be a little longer. But generally speaking, it's about 10 minutes worth of time. If it's any good, you'll like it. And if it sucks, you won't. I'd be curious to know what you all know. So look for that coming up real soon, all right? Real soon. You have 5 chapters. It's going to be A Buzzard Blinked, Above It All, Ideally Situated, Midnight Pie, and Woefully Mutated. So those are the working titles of these 5 chapters of old fiction files that I stumbled onto recently. Look for them. I'm going to use those names as the titles for each episode. And I'm going to work a normal monologics, runaway train of thought into it all and make it make sense and tie together. With that, I bid you adieu.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.